No, it's gone. Vanished. Did you take it? I'm sure you did. You're in the pocket of that doctor, aren't you?
I didn't dare linger any longer. Servants are not supposed to eavesdrop on the conversations of their betters. But as I went down the narrow hall back to the kitchens, I was dying of curiosity. One of the women in the royal party was missing something valuable, and it could not be Princess Beatrice or Lady Lytton. They were both in the grounds with the Queen. Princess Helena, then? The unstable princess who had wanted me to buy drugs for her. Is that what she was missing? Her supply of drugs? But she had used the word it. I paused in mid-stride. Could the item be a revolver, by any chance? Could someone staying here at the Excelsior Regina have borrowed the princess's revolver to take a shot at the Queen? This was none of my business, I knew. I was a mere cook, not in charge of Her Majesty's safety, but I found that I felt a fierce loyalty to her. She might be the Queen, but she was an old woman. She was vulnerable. Perhaps that was why she wanted to be incognito when she came to the Riviera. Nobody should want to assassinate a mere Lady Balmoral. If she'd only come with a small party and rented a villa, she could have passed this off. But ordinary women do not bring regiments of pipers and outlandish Indian servants with them. I went back to my work and followed Jean-Paul's directions for the roast duck. By the time it was finished, the skin was brown and deliciously crisp. The orange sauce I made to accompany it was sharp and tasty, and the bouillabaisse. I took a little taste, and it was delicious. I accompanied these with roast potatoes, puree of Brussels sprouts, and a macaroni pudding. The dinner was apparently met with approval. The footman who brought back the dishes reported that the Queen had had a hearty appetite and commented on the fish soup. The only one who didn't approve was Count Wilhelm, who was still recuperating in his bedchamber and who sent down a footman to report that he had complained bitterly that the dinner did not contain any good, healthy Fleisch. Why was he not served the full scope of the dinner, and why was his tray not brought to him by the good-looking boy Jimmy? I wondered how long he would remain in his room if he felt he was missing out on the full meal served in the dining room. Sir James Reed came into the kitchen just when I had finished clearing up.
"I have just checked on our invalids," he said, "and it is good news. I think we can rule out typhoid or cholera. It is a case of dysentery, although that disease is not to be sniffed at. At least it is not highly contagious. If they have a satisfactory night, I think maybe they might try a little beef tea in the morning."
"Certainly, doctor," I said. "I have had beef bones simmering all afternoon. I'll clarify and have some sent up to them in the morning."
"I congratulate you," he said. "You are a most competent young woman. Most females would panic at the thought of having to feed a royal party alone, but you have pulled it off."
"Thank you, doctor."
I blushed bright red.
I went to bed basking in the doctor's words. I had cooked for the royal party single-handedly, and apparently they were all satisfied. Maybe I would soon be a confident enough chef to run my own kitchen or even open my own restaurant. Pride comes before a fall, my mother always used to remind us. I should be thankful for what I had at this moment.
Chapter 29.
In the morning, I rose early, remembering the Queen's request, and walked down the hill to the market. A stiff wind was blowing off the sea, buffeting me as I descended the steep street. Clouds were building on the western horizon. It promised to rain later. I should get my shopping done quickly and return to the hotel before I was soaked. I heard footsteps coming up behind me and stepped aside to let the person in an obvious hurry go past. It was Jean-Paul Le Pen. He reacted with surprise at seeing me.
"So, you brave the market on such a blustery morning. You are indeed dedicated, mademoiselle. I salute you."
"The Queen requested a repeat of the mushroom dish I served to her. Perhaps you would be good enough to recommend which mushrooms I should buy."
"Of course," he said. And if you decide to make another bouillabaisse, then I recommend that you start with the freshest fish from the stalls rather than that obtained from the hotel's suppliers. I would not serve a fish dish if I had not personally picked out items from that day's catch.
I don't think I dare serve them a fish stew 2 days in a row, I said. There was a complaint last night from the German count that I had not served any red meat.
He was the one who was shot.
Yes.
A brave man. He took the bullet to protect the queen, I hear.
There are two different accounts to that, I said. The queen said she thought he was trying to get out of the way and bumped into her, thus saving her life. He chuckled.
We should let the former story stand. It may be his one chance in life to be considered a hero.
We walked on in silence, then he cleared his throat and said,
Mademoiselle, I should like to apologize for the other evening. I realized immediately that a well-raised English girl like yourself has certain standards. You English do not share the passion of the French race. And perhaps you were right. It was the fear, the heat of the moment that made you respond to me when I kissed you.
I didn't quite know what to say. I have had very little experience with men, I said at last. But I do know that I was raised to believe that a young woman waits for marriage before... I couldn't go on with that sentence, so intense was my embarrassment.
I was shocked when you invited me to a hotel with you.
He was frowning.
But, mademoiselle, I fear that you misunderstand my intentions. I suggested we should go to my cousin's hotel because I could see how upset you were. I did not think you were ready to walk all the way up the hill, and I thought a cognac and a chance to recuperate might be beneficial for you.
I looked up at him, not sure whether to believe this or not. You said you wanted to get to know me better, I pointed out. With men, it seems that means only one thing. A smile crossed his face.
You are right. Perhaps it does for some men. But the demands of my profession mean I have had limited experience with women, especially with women from a good family. I do not always have the right words to phrase things correctly. But on that occasion, I really did intend to limit it merely to conversation, and perhaps another small kiss or two.
He shot me an inquiring glance, then went on.
I assumed, wrongly, that you felt something for me, as I felt for you, and I confess I had joined in the celebration with a little too much wine. Can we forget it happened and wipe the slate clean?
We can. Conflicting emotions were fighting within me. I wanted to believe that his intentions had been honourable, but had they? And I wanted to let him know that I, too, had felt something for him, but the encounters with the Prince of Wales and with those awful men in the street were all too raw in my mind, and I still wasn't sure that his intentions had been as honourable as he claimed. He gave a curt little nod.
That is good. From now on, our relationship will only be professional.
Only professional, I echoed. We came to the market, and Jean-Paul instructed me on which mushrooms were best for which kind of dishes. I bought some of each and even dared to add a small piece of truffle, to be grated over fowl or fish, Jean-Paul said. Then he bought a small piece of truffle for himself.
Do you have more commissions to fulfill?
He asked. I thought I would get more whitebait as the Queen is fond of it, I replied.
I too must visit the fish market, he said, and I would be happy to escort you back up the hill. However, first I promise to bring some of this truffle to a certain lady. She is very fond of such delicacies.
He paused, then added,
Would you like to accompany me to visit her?
She lives nearby, and after we can be extravagant and take a cab together up the hill. I was still flustered and confused.
Oh, I'm sure you do not wish my presence when you visit a lady friend, I replied stiffly.
Amusement flashed in his eyes.
Ah, but you see this lady friend is over 90, he replied. She's my grandmother. She lives nearby.
Oh, your grandmother, I said.
So you will accompany me?
Again, I hesitated. I should be getting back for my food preparation, I said. I find myself in charge of breakfast as well as the other meals.
Of course, it was thoughtless of me to suggest this, but my chefs are at your disposal when you need assistance, you know.
I could tell he was disappointed. I really would like to visit your grandmother with you, I said, but I feel the responsibility very strongly. One does not wish to make any errors when feeding a royal party.
I understand completely, but I have to tell you that I am very impressed with your cooking skills and with your organization. For such a young woman, you seem very calm.
Except for the other evening, I said. He looked at me and laughed.
So why do you not stop at my grandmother's house with me for a small second? The cab will whisk us up the hill speedier than we could walk.
How could I say no?
Very well, if you really would like me to accompany you, I replied.
He looked pleased. We went to the fish stalls, and Jean-Paul made sure I was given the freshest whitebait, while he himself selected wings of skate and a big bag of mussels.
So, tell me how you cook this fish, I said as we walked together.
I didn't know the French word for skate.
La raie,
he asked, and told me how he prepared it. I was expecting his grandmother to live in the old town, like Claudette's mother, but instead we walked until we came to a handsome white building surrounded by a garden. His grandmother lived on the ground floor. She was a tiny, delicate creature wearing a white lace cap. She kissed Jean-Paul many times, calling him her angel. Then she wanted to kiss me too, but Jean-Paul said hurriedly that I was just a colleague from the hotel, a fellow chef. She seemed really interested in this. A woman as a chef, whatever next? And I saw her giving him an inquiring glance. He refused a coffee and a pastry, telling his grandmother that I was needed to cook for the English queen. She was suitably impressed and took my hands as I made to leave.
Come to visit me again, any time, she said. Life is lonely for an old woman, although my grandson comes whenever he can. He is a good boy. He cares for his family. Very important, don't you think? Family?
I agreed that it was. When she learned that my parents were both dead, that my one sister was married, and that apart from that I had nobody, she smiled up at me.
Then I shall be your new family, no?
Your grandmother is delightful, I said as Jean-Paul led us to a taxi rank.
As are all of my family. A race of delightful people.
He gave a cocky little grin.
They are all here in Nice.
All of them.
My parents, my father owns several businesses, including a patisserie. My three sisters are married, and I have 12 nephews and nieces. I am the youngest. They despair of me.
As we went back into the hotel, I sensed that something had somehow changed between us. A barrier had been broken down, and I wondered if it was intentional that he had wanted me to visit his grandmother. Had he wanted to show me that he was a good, reliable man after all? The thought that he had wanted to reassure me was a comforting one. I cooked breakfast for the royal party, including another boiled egg for the Queen, as she had so enjoyed the first. Then sent up more rice water and warm beef tea to the four invalids and set about preparing luncheon. I would serve some of the mushrooms in an omelette and save the more robust ones for a meat dish in the evening, maybe a steak and mushroom pie. I was pleased with that idea, as it allowed me to show off my pastry-making skills. Luncheon went smoothly, but I was sitting down to my own meal when the dreaded Count Wilhelm came into the kitchen. I have to say, he did look rather pale and unsteady on his feet, and I immediately felt a stab of guilt that I had thought he might be exaggerating his wounds.
"You, girl, where is the chef?" he demanded. "I wish to speak with him instantly."
"I am the chef, Your Highness," I replied. "My colleagues are indisposed. Can I help you?"
"The food does not agree with me," he said. "Last night, that stew of fish that was sent up to my room. My home state is far from any ocean, and my stomach is not used to fishes. What is more, The bay leaves should have been removed.
I'm most sorry, sir. I thought I had removed all of them.
There were pieces of bay leaf. Quite indigestible. Don't let it happen again, he said. And today's luncheon? Finally, I am brave enough to come down and eat with the family, and what do I find? I find an omelette and a chicken dish. Again, no fleisch, no good meat. I have lost much blood. I am dizzy and weak from blood loss. I should be eating meat.
I am cooking a steak pie for dinner tonight, Your Highness, I replied. That should satisfy you. Then I had a brilliant idea. And I do have some beef tea, if that would fortify you for the present.
Now we are talking sense.
He looked quite pleased. I had the pan on the warming stove, so I ladled a cup for him, and he drank it down, making little lip smackings of satisfaction. He put the cup down on the table.
It's good, he said. I shall be requiring more of this beef tea at intervals. Make sure some is available.
I certainly will, Your Highness, and I trust you are making a good recovery from your wounds, I asked.
It will heal with time, he said, and I will bear the suffering patiently.
As he turned to leave, he staggered a little, banging into one of the tables, a bit too dramatically, I thought.
You see, the blood loss has affected my balance, he said. I must rest again.
It crossed my mind to wonder whether he was drunk. I went back to my own meal, which was now cold. I was just helping myself to a little trifle when one of the hotel porters came into the kitchen.
Are you Mademoiselle Barton? He asked.
Yes, I am, I replied.
A man outside is asking for you.
A man?
An Englishman. He comes in a smart equipage.
Oh, goodness. It had to be Giles Waverley. And I was hot, sweaty, and in my cook's apron. I was going to say that I was not free to see him at this moment when the bellboy went on.
He says he is very worried about you since he heard of the Queen's misfortune and could wait no longer for your note. He begs you to spare him 2 minutes of your time just to reassure him you are safe and well.
I took a deep breath. Please tell him I will be with him as soon as I can, and please do not mention that you found me in the kitchen. He does not know that I am a cook.
That was clear, he grinned.
He said you were a young lady of the Queen's household.
Which is true, I am. Just not what he thinks, I replied. I will hurry and change. I ran all the way up the flights of stairs, put on a clean blouse, splashed water on my face and stuck pins in my hair, then ran all the way down again. Giles was standing beside his horse and trap under one of the large palm trees, away from the hotel entrance. His face lit up as I went to join him.
Thank heavens! You are safe. We read the terrible news in the English newspaper, and it only said that the bullets struck a member of the Queen's party, so of course I feared the worst.
It was Count Wilhelm from Germany who was struck, but luckily the bullet only grazed his shoulder. As you can see, I am quite unharmed.
Do you have a few minutes to talk? We could walk in the gardens, or across to the park.
I glanced back at the hotel.
A few minutes, maybe, but not the gardens. We could be seen from hotel windows.
Is the Queen so strict with all her ladies? He asked as he tied his horse to a railing and then started to walk away from the hotel to the park with me.
She does not want any of you to meet young men, or only the young men of her choosing.
I hesitated. I really hated this.
Tell him now, I thought. Put an end to this.
But I glanced at his hopeful face, and I couldn't say the words. Meeting young men while in her service is frowned upon, I said.
Would it help if I went to see someone in person? Her private secretary, maybe? And assured him that my intentions were honourable.
I don't think that would matter, I said. I turned to face him. Please give me a little time, Giles. I need to work out how best to handle this.
So you do want to see me again?
I really can hope.
I really enjoy being with you, I said, weighing every word. But I can't jeopardize my current position in the household.
You know, I told my father about you, and he's frightfully keen to meet you. Giles said. Perhaps we can invite you to dinner with one of the other ladies as a chaperone. Now this was getting too awkward. I'm usually required to be present at the dinner hour, I said with great tact.
I'm going to find a way around your stuffy regulations. He gave a determined nod.
Now look here. Here's a healthy young chap of good family wanting to spend time with a young girl of similar good breeding. Who could possibly be against that? Then he paused and that worried look returned. Unless... Oh, I see. Unless the royal household has someone else in mind for you. I know they go in for arranged marriages. You were probably promised to some frightful German count. Maybe even the one who got shot. I had to laugh at this. Giles, I can assure you that I would refuse to marry any German count, especially that one. Look, all I ask for right now is a little time. Let me think how best to handle this, then I'll write to you again. He sighed. Well, I suppose that's better than nothing. Gives a chap a modicum of hope. And I have to get back, I said. They will have noticed that I slipped away. It's like being in a glorified boarding school, he said. Exactly. I don't envy you, he said. He took my hands. Bella, take care, please. Someone has taken a pot shot at the Queen. I don't want anything to happen to you. Don't worry, I'll be very careful, I replied. Now, I must go. And I almost broke into a run in my haste to return to the hotel. My mind was in a state of turmoil. I must tell Giles the truth right away, I thought. He is bringing disgrace on his family by paying attention to a cook. I wondered what would happen if I told him the real truth. Wouldn't his family want to rescue me from the lowly state in which I now found myself? I would marry Giles and become Lady Faversham. But what if they decided this episode of my life was too shameful? And the most important question of all, did I want to walk away from being a cook? Would I be happy sitting in a drawing room, sipping tea and making idle gossip while someone else cooked my meals and reared my children? It was a question I couldn't answer. I went back to work and produced a glorious steak and mushroom pie for the royal dinner. I decorated the pastry crust with leaves and vines. It was a work of art, and I was immensely proud of it. I fried the whitebait that Jean-Paul had selected for me as a first course, made a salad with the remaining duck, added a bean soup and ordered juices for dessert. I felt rather proud of myself when I collapsed onto the bed at 11 o'clock. I decided I would not attempt the market in the morning, but allow myself a good night's sleep. In the middle of the night, a storm blew up, rattling my windows and howling around the hotel. The morning dawned equally unpromising, and I was glad I had decided not to go to the market. I should have been drenched. As I came down to breakfast, I noticed an air of tension. The French chefs looked up from their rolls and coffee.
"The English doctor is looking for you," one of them said.
"Oh dear, is it bad news?"
"I think it must be. He had a grave look on his face."
This was awful. One of the patients must have taken a turn for the worse. Or perhaps Dr. Reed's tests had revealed typhoid after all. I found it hard to eat anything. I could hardly go looking for him, and I had been forbidden to go up to the rooms of the stricken men. What if one of them had died? I had not felt a particular attachment to any of them. Mr. Angelo had always treated me fairly. Jimmy was a funny, cheeky boy, but the two men had ignored me until this journey. But now I felt almost as if they were my family. I couldn't lose one of them. I managed to nibble a little bread and drink a cup of milky coffee, then I went to work on breakfast. The hotel had procured lamb's kidneys, and I made a kidney and bacon dish I knew the Queen was fond of. No sooner had the footman taken the trays when Dr. Reed came in. He had the gravest frown on his face. I stood up.
"Bad news, Doctor?"
"Very bad. I'm afraid Count Wilhelm is in an extremely grave condition."
"Oh no. Is it blood poisoning from his wound?"
"No, I think it is something intestinal. I fear it's something he ate."
"Something he ate?"
"Yes. Can you tell me what he ate yesterday?"
"I can.
I sent a tray up for his breakfast and lunch, exactly the same food as went to the royal dining room. The luncheon was a mushroom omelette and a chicken fricassee. He came into the kitchen and complained that there was no good red meat, so I gave him a cup of the beef broth I'd made for the others. And for dinner, he joined the Queen in the dining room. The menu was bean soup, steak and mushroom pie, whitebait, duck salad, and ices from the hotel confectioner.
So, he was served no special meals?
No. The only thing he had that the rest of the party did not eat was that cup of beef broth. I paused. Do you think it is a case of food poisoning? Or has he perhaps caught whatever has stricken my colleagues?
The thought did cross my mind that he might have been to visit Jimmy. He wasn't one to give up easily on something he wanted.
The doctor shook his head.
No, I don't think it's a simple food poisoning.
Then maybe it was the white bait. He did say when he came into the kitchen that fish does not agree with his stomach, having grown up so far from any ocean.
But the fish were fresh.
Could not have been fresher, I said. They were bought from the market that morning. So were the mushrooms.
He frowned again.
Ah, yes, the mushrooms. That is my fear, that he ate a bad mushroom.
You did not obtain these through the hotel's supplier?
No, they came from the town market, I said. But Chef Lupin picked them out for me.
That was probably not wise, he said. These peasants, they do not always know what they are picking in the woods, and a poisonous mushroom can look a lot like an edible one.
Oh, surely not, I said. And anyway, Chef Lupin would know the difference. He serves them to his own diners.
All the same, accidents can happen, and this does seem to present itself as a case of severe poisoning of some sort.
I'm really sorry, I said. Is there something I can do?
Nothing. I'd say we try and flush out his stomach, but too much time has already passed. The toxicity is in his system, and his organs are starting to shut down.
Then it's possible he will die. The words came out as a whisper.
I fear it's quite likely. There is no antidote that I know to mushroom poisoning. And as I said, too much time has elapsed. If we washed out his stomach or made him vomit immediately, we may have had a chance to reverse the damage, but no, we can just watch and wait, give him fluids and hope that his constitution is strong enough to come through this. He left, taking a bowl of the beef tea with him. I felt terrible. What had I done? I had not liked the man, but I did not wish him to suffer at my hands, and I realized that I did not know one mushroom from another. I had trusted Jean-Paul. But had he let me down? And then another worrying thought crept into my head. What might happen to me if it was found I had poisoned a member of the royal family?
Chapter 30. Before the end of the day came the news that Count Wilhelm had died. His heart had given out. The household was instructed to go into mourning. Most of us had no black clothing with us, so black armbands were supplied. I cooked a simple roast capon and a rice pudding for dinner, thinking this was in keeping with the mood. But I felt so worried and so guilty that I was hardly able to concentrate on preparing even the simplest of dishes. The Count had died. I had killed him. The French chefs were naturally curious, and I told Jean-Paul what had happened. He frowned at my suggestion.
A poisoned mushroom? This is not possible. I have dealt with that man for years now. He is quite reliable. He would not make a mistake. Besides, I myself selected those mushrooms. I know a good mushroom from a bad one.
The doctor is quite sure the Count was poisoned, and there was nothing else in the meal that could have had that effect.
I'm really sorry. Jean-Paul was looking down at me with concern. I don't know what to say. It has put you in an unenviable position.
I know, I feel terrible. What will happen to me now? Will I be blamed?
I do not see how anyone can hold you responsible for an accident, he said. If anyone is to blame, it is I. I selected the mushrooms. but I would swear on my reputation as a chef that there was no poisonous variety amongst them. I nodded, trying to reassure myself. All I can think is, what would have happened if the queen had eaten that mushroom? I could see that this thought had not occurred to him before. We can thank the good God that she did not. She is a lucky woman. She seems to live a charmed life. Twice in a week, she has escaped death.
Would it be an imposition to ask if your chefs could serve the royal party until this unfortunate matter is resolved? I asked. I am clearly under suspicion, and I would hate to make them uncomfortable with their food. Since we are all in mourning, it only needs to be a simple meal.
But of course, he said, and do not worry. I am sure tests will be carried out and all the blame will be removed from you. It is possible this person took his own life with some kind of medicine.
I did not think that Count Wilhelm was the kind of person who would take his own life. He had thought too much of himself for that. I spent a miserable day. The four invalids were not making much progress. They were past the critical stage, but were all very weak. I could hardly eat a thing myself, and went to bed as soon as I could. In the morning, I had scarcely finished my cup of coffee when I was summoned to a sitting room on the first floor of the hotel. Dr. Reed was there, also Sir Arthur Bigg and a man I had not seen before.
"Come in, Miss Barton," Dr. Reed said. "This is Chief Inspector Rowley. He is in charge of the Queen's security. He was called from London immediately after the attempt was made on Her Majesty's life. He would like to ask you some questions."
I nodded, not taking my eyes off the newcomer. He was sitting in an apparently relaxed position in an armchair, but he was observing me with shrewd little dark eyes. With his head tilted to one side and a beak-like nose, he reminded me of some kind of bird, a bird of prey.
"So you are the young woman who cooked the mushroom that killed the German count?" he asked.
"I cooked two meals containing mushrooms," I said, meeting his gaze with what I hoped was confident defiance. "I don't know if it has been verified yet what exactly killed Count Wilhelm."
"It very much appears to be poisoning, and the way the Count's organs shut down does seem to indicate that it was not a simple distress to the digestive system, but that a mushroom was to blame," Dr. Reed said. They were all three staring at me. It felt like a trial in a court of law. I tried to remain calm.
The newly arrived inspector cleared his throat.
"I am told that you obtained these mushrooms not from the hotel supplies that were at your disposal, but from a different source."
"Yes, sir, a stall in the town market."
"And why did you do that?"
"This stall specializes in mushrooms and truffles. It has many interesting varieties, and the hotel chef here at the Regina always buys his mushrooms at this stall. He selected a variety for me on this occasion, since I had prepared mushrooms for the Queen on a previous occasion, and she requested them again."
"I see."
There was a long pause.
"So you had no way of knowing whether these mushrooms were good or bad?"
"No, sir. I trusted the expert opinion of a local chef, a well-respected local chef."
"I would put this down to a tragic accident, a misjudgment," Chief Inspector Rowley said, "except that an attempt was made on the Queen's life so recently. I asked myself whether maybe this chef was also an anarchist or an anti-royalist. Perhaps he was the one who pulled the trigger in the failed assassination attempt and then resorted to more subtle means."
"Oh, surely not," I blurted out.
"How well do you know this man?"
I thought I detected sarcasm in his voice. I wondered if someone had seen us kissing in the town and he was hinting at a relationship that didn't exist.
"Only in a professional manner, working side by side in the kitchens. Chef Le Pan has been most helpful to me, instructing me in the preparation of new dishes. And I can't believe he would wish any harm to the Queen. In fact, he told me how glad he was that she had chosen to come to Nice because it meant that the new hotel had opened and given him a chance to cook for foreign visitors."
"All the same, we cannot rule out that someone with evil intentions might have used an innocent young woman to perpetrate his scheme," Sir Arthur said.
He was looking at me with kindly understanding.
"Or not so innocent," Inspector Rowley said, and again there was a smirk in his voice. "How long have you been in Her Majesty's service?"
"Since September, sir," Ah, so you are a newcomer to the household. And you came from where? I suddenly realized that I was in an awful trap. If I lied, they could well find out the truth and I'd be under further suspicion. If I came clean and told the truth now, then they'd see me as an imposter with hostile intentions. They were staring at me.
From Yorkshire, sir, I mumbled the words. From Lady Sowerby's estate.
Why did you leave your former situation?
Lady Sowerby was old and had decided to close up her own household and go to live with her son.
But London, that's a long way from home for you, isn't it? What made you come to London?
I saw the advertisement, sir, and who would not want a chance to cook for the royal household? That seemed to satisfy them.
I think that's all for now, Miss Barton, the policeman said. We won't know more until we receive the results of the toxicology tests on Count Wilhelm.
I had only taken a couple of steps before he added,
We will need your full particulars, young lady. Place of birth, employment history, references.
Those are all at the palace, Chief Inspector, I said. I submitted full particulars when I applied for the job.
Precisely, he said in a clipped voice. They are not here for me to check on, are they? Write everything down for me. I decided the time might have come to stand up to them.
I don't know why you think I would have deliberately put a poisoned mushroom into a pie, I said angrily.
If you really believe I wanted to kill Her Majesty, that would be a really stupid way to attempt it, wouldn't it? It was such a random thing to do. The chances of the Queen actually getting that mushroom were small, and why would I want to harm any other member of the royal party?
We were not suggesting that there was any evil intention on your part, Sir Arthur said hastily. Please do not distress yourself, Miss Barton.
If I had wanted to harm the Queen, I have had perfect opportunities, I went on. She took to her bed after the attempted assassination, and I carried up her meals on a tray. I sat alone with her while she ate them.
You will be good enough to write out a list of all the food served to the royal party on that day, Miss Barton, the inspector said.
Was there any occasion, to your knowledge, when Count Wilhelm might have eaten something that other members of the royal party did not?
Not on that day, I said. I forgot to add sir. I was so rattled by now.
But the first day after he was shot, he did remain in his room and meals were sent up to him. However, he had exactly the same food I had prepared for the royal dining room. I hesitated. Has something occurred to me?
Count Wilhelm had a habit of coming into the kitchen.
Coming into the kitchen? Sir Arthur asked, horrified.
Yes, sir. He had frequent complaints about meals and he helped himself to anything he liked the look of.
That is most unseemly, Dr. Reed said. Was that reported?
I understand that Mr. Angelo, our master cook, did complain about it. To no avail.
Yes, now that you mention it, I did hear something about it, Sir Arthur said. But I felt that the Count had a perfect right to visit the chef and complain if the food was not to his liking.
So did the Count come into the kitchen on the day in question? The day he took ill?
Yes, he did. He was upset that there was no red meat with his luncheon, and he had not liked the fish stew from the night before.
Did he sample anything in the kitchen on that occasion? I frowned, thinking.
No, in fact, he still seemed rather weak from his gunshot wound. He seemed unsteady on his feet. I paused, then added, Oh, I did give him a cup of the beef broth I had made for the other invalids. He seemed to like it.
That must have annoyed you, Miss Barton, the Chief Inspector said, having this man wandering into your kitchen at will.
I found it very annoying, sir. He gave a satisfied little nod. I stared at him incredulously.
But if you think I poisoned his food to stop him from visiting the kitchen, I'm afraid I find that ridiculous.
Nobody is suggesting that you deliberately poisoned the Count, Dr. Reed said hastily, but I could see that was exactly what Chief Inspector Raleigh wanted to suggest.
Did anyone else visit your kitchen? He asked.
Only Dr. Reed when he came to inform me on the condition of the patients.
We shall need to speak to the servant who carried up the Count's tray, the inspector said, addressing the other two gentlemen.
But that was the day before Miss Barton purchased the mushrooms, Sir Arthur said, looking confused now.
On the day in question, we are told that the Count ate his meals with the rest of the party.
But he did visit the kitchen. The inspector was not going to let this go.
Can we think whether anyone might have had a grudge against the Count? Is it possible that someone from his part of Germany is working at this hotel? Someone who might see this as an opportunity to get rid of an unpopular ruler? If that were the case, then this whole sad business can have nothing to do with Miss Barton. I don't think we need to detain her any longer.
Maybe not, the inspector agreed. But we shall need all those particulars, Miss Barton, just in case.
Very good, sir, I replied stiffly. As I went to leave, the inspector added,
You understand that we want to keep this matter strictly between ourselves. Consider yourself lucky that it has not been turned over to the French police. I can assure you that their methods of interrogation would not be as gentle as mine.
There is nothing to interrogate, sir, I said. If the mushroom I cooked into the pie was indeed poisonous, then it was a tragic accident, for which I am genuinely sorry.
I gave a little nod before I left the room. I had not mentioned that Princess Sophie would be the one who was now rejoicing that the Count was dead.
Chapter 31. I don't know how I stumbled back to my bedroom. Once there, I stood at the open window, taking in big gulps of fresh air. I had always despised women who fainted, but at this moment my head was ringing and I felt I could easily pass out. It was clear to me that the inspector from London was anxious to wrap up the case quickly. He would be looking into my background, and as soon as he contacted Sowerby Hall, he would learn that Helen Barton had died. So I was an imposter, up to no good, someone who had joined the palace with an ulterior motive. I could see how easily a case against me could be built. Disgruntled gentlewoman, father cheated out of inheritance, sacked from job, raising his daughter with a chip on her shoulder against all aristocrats. But if I told the truth now, maybe went to Dr. Reed or to Sir Arthur, who seemed to have taken kindly to me, I wouldn't fare any better. At the very least, I would be dismissed from service immediately. I was damned if I did and damned if I didn't. I couldn't think of anyone who might speak on my behalf. Mr. Angelo would say I was a good worker, but so what? I desperately needed advice, a female companion. I realized I had been so horribly alone since my mother died and I was sent to the Tillys' house. There I had shunned closeness to other servants, thinking myself to be above them. When I moved to the palace, I had enjoyed chatting with Mrs. Sims, but again had not allowed myself to open up to her since I had to carry the burden of my enormous secret. And my little sister, Louisa. I was fond enough of her, but we were so different, and I was the older one. The responsible one. I had never once told her how I felt. Now I sank back onto my bed longing for my mother, longing for a woman's arms around me, telling me that everything was going to be all right. For the first time in my life, I was truly frightened. As I lay there, a thought came to me. Lady Mary Crozier had seemed to be a kind and sensible woman. If I went to her and told her the truth, perhaps she could advise me on what course to take. I couldn't ask her to speak on my behalf since she didn't know me, but at least I could have the advice of a woman, and I could tell my story to someone who would listen with sympathy. I washed my face, tidied my hair, put on my new dress, then looked at the time. Still only 10 o'clock. Was it done to call upon an aristocrat this early? I thought not, but at least I could probably guarantee that she'd still be at home. I had to risk it. The day was mockingly fine. Birds chirped in the big pine trees. Dappled sunlight played across the path. The sweet smell of spring flowers wafted on a gentle breeze. It was a day for a picnic, for a stroll in the gardens, for a ride in Giles's carriage. I paused, considering. Was he a person I could go to? But I had deceived him, hadn't I? He might find that a cook who had acted as if she was a legitimate member of the royal household might make him a laughingstock if the truth came out. I took a deep breath and walked resolutely toward Lady Mary's villa. The maid who answered the front door looked startled to see a caller on the doorstep this early in the day.
"The Marquis is not ready for visitors," she said in her prim French voice. "If you leave your calling card on the tray, I will present it to her at the appropriate time."
"It is a very urgent matter, mademoiselle," I said.
I would not usually disturb my lady so early, but it is very important that I speak with her. Could you please tell her that Miss Barton begs for a few minutes of her time?
I will tell her,
she said, implying that she wasn't hopeful for a good outcome.
Remain here.
I waited in the marble foyer, examining the statues and potted palms. Everything was so perfect, so elegant, and people like Lady Mary took it for granted. Eventually, I heard voices coming from the rear of the villa, then a voice from the balcony at the top of the stairs said,
I don't know what this is about, and my maid was still completing my toilette, but curiosity got the better of me.
She came down the stairs, still in a peach silk robe trimmed with feathers. Her feet tapped in silk slippers across the marble floor.
You'd better come into the music room. My husband is in the morning room reading the newspapers, I expect. And bring us coffee, Yvette.
Of course, Marquise.
The maid hurried off in one direction. I followed Lady Mary into a sitting room dominated by a grand piano. The carpet was dark blue with a lighter blue silk wallpaper, and the view was onto the fish pond and the gardens beyond.
Take a seat.
Her voice had no warmth in it, and the friendly smile of our last encounter was missing.
Now, she said, what have you to say for yourself, miss?
It was such an aggressive outburst that I was taken aback. Had she already heard about the poisoning of Count Wilhelm, and was she blaming me?
Well, she went on, I only agreed to meet you because I am dying to know who you really are and why you thought it was acceptable to deceive me that you were a member of Her Majesty's household.
Again, I wasn't quite sure what she was getting at.
I am here as part of Her Majesty's retinue, I said. I don't think so. I was chatting with Lady Lytton and mentioned you and what a success you were at our party. She said there was nobody called Helen amongst Her Majesty's household.
She looked up as the maid came in with a tray of coffee. There was silence as the coffee was poured into two cups and hot milk was added.
So was it a joke for you? And who are you in reality?
I assure you it was no joke, I said. You approached me, remember, Lady Mary? You didn't ask for any details, only that you wanted my red hair as part of your tableau. What you never gave me time to tell you was that I did come from the palace with the queen, but I am not a lady-in-waiting. I am her cook. Her eyes opened wide, and without warning, she burst out laughing.
Her cook?
I nodded.
I'm afraid so. I only agreed to take part in your tableau because I didn't want to let you down.
She looked confused.
But you are a girl of good family. One can tell breeding. Your speech. Your behaviour. You can't be a cook.
I am, I said.
You are right that I am from a good family, but we suffered a series of reversals of fate, ending with my parents both dead and my being responsible for a little sister with no means of support. I had to go into service, which I can assure you was highly painful and embarrassing for me. Then I discovered an aptitude for cooking, one might even say a passion for it.
How extraordinary, she said.
What an extraordinary story. And so your cooking skills came to the notice of the royal household?
Not exactly, I said. They do not know my true story. I have shared it with nobody so far. That is why I've come to you. I have to tell someone the truth, and you seemed to be a wise and kind woman.
My dear, do go on. I am all ears.
She leaned forward in her seat. So I told her the whole story, from Mrs. Tilly refusing me a reference to Helen Barton being killed, my reading the letter and taking the terrible risk of applying in her place. It was my one chance, you see, I said. I didn't see the harm in it at the time. Helen was dead. They would need another cook to take her place, and I knew I was good enough.
So why the need to tell the truth now? She asked. If you are accepted and respected in the royal kitchen, what harm is there that you work under an assumed name?
Because of what has just happened, I said, and told her about the Count dying of mushroom poisoning.
So I don't know what to do, I finished. I would not have troubled you, but I am desperate, and I have no friends here to turn to.
Let me understand this, she said, staring past me out of the window. You bought mushrooms from a stall,
One of those mushrooms was apparently of a poisonous variety, and this German count died as a result. I nodded.
A tragic mistake, I agree, she said. But I don't see how you can be blamed. You bought the mushrooms from a store that specializes in them.
Exactly the place one would go to if one wanted mushrooms. I am sure my own servants would shop there. You bore no malice or evil intent.
That's the problem, I said. A police inspector has come out from London and he is trying to build a case that the mushroom was intended for the Queen and that I am somehow part of an anarchist plot.
How utterly ridiculous, she said. If that was your intent, what were the chances that the Queen would actually eat the poisoned mushroom and not another member of her household?
That is precisely what I said. I told them that the Queen stayed in her bedchamber on the day after she was shot at, and I carried up her food. I would have had every chance to poison her then.
Except you didn't already have the mushrooms, she pointed out.
That's true.
But what on earth would make them think you might be connected to an anarchist plot?
They have asked me to supply all of my particulars, my birth, my previous employment, my references. Don't you see? Once they find that the real Helen Barton is dead, they will know I'm an imposter, and they will fabricate a reason that I used subterfuge to infiltrate the royal kitchen.
Lady Mary continued to stare out of the window.
Yes, I can see that is a knotty problem for you. Even if I go to Sir Arthur or Dr. Reed and tell them the whole truth, it would mean instant dismissal, I'm sure. And that London inspector is itching to make a case against me. I can see him saying that I planned this whole thing. He'd point out that I was raised by a disgruntled aristocrat who wanted vengeance.
So what is your real name? Lady Mary asked.
Isabella Waverley, I said.
Waverley? Related to the current Earl? And young Viscount Faversham?
Their cousin.
Do they know that?
Absolutely not, I said.
Young Faversham was rather smitten with you, I seem to remember.
Yes, and I've seen him a couple of times. We went for a carriage ride together. I felt bad about deceiving him and kept trying to tell him that I couldn't meet him again.
He'll be most disappointed when he finds out that I'm a mere cook.
I know.
No, my dear, that you are his cousin and therefore off limits. She laughed.
I'm only a second cousin, I pointed out. My father and the Earl were first cousins. My father's branch of the family had no money and no inheritance. My father was born in India and then sent back into the army there.
That's the way it goes with our sort of family, isn't it? The heir gets everything. The spares are sent into the army, or the law, or the church.
Not fair, one might say. But, my dear, why didn't you appeal to the Earl for help when your parents died?
My father had gone to the family for help once and been turned down. He let us know that no assistance could be hoped for in that quarter.
But Isabella, she reached out and put her hand over mine. This might be a blessing in disguise for you. Giles is already fond of you. If you went to them now and told them of your predicament, you would have powerful allies. I'm sure you'd be welcomed into the bosom of the family, and the London policeman would know that you have a good pedigree and no reason to want to harm any member of the royal family.
Do you really think so? I asked cautiously.
Darling, look at you. You have the sweetest face. Who could turn you down? I wouldn't be surprised if Giles didn't propose to you on the spot.
Oh gosh, I felt my cheeks burning.
But the fact that I have been a servant, surely that would bring disgrace and embarrassment to the family.
Much has been overlooked for a pretty face before now, she said.
Your character, Nell Gwynne, lived a very comfortable life after King Charlie discovered her.
But he didn't marry her, I pointed out. I have already had an offer to be someone's mistress.
Really? Do tell, she gave an excited little shrug.
The Prince of Wales, actually.
And you turned him down? My dear, I am impressed. You certainly have integrity.
I couldn't, you know, with a man I didn't love.
Quite right.
So you really think that I should go see the Waverleys and tell them my whole story?
I do. And if they don't believe me or don't want to accept me,
what have you lost at this point?
It seems to me that you'll have to tell the truth to someone in the Queen's party.
And be dismissed. Then what? I'll have no reference and nowhere to go.
She took my hand and squeezed it.
Silly girl. You shall come to stay with me.
I'll introduce you as a young cousin home from the colonies and we'll find you a suitable husband in no time at all. I looked up at her.
You are very kind, but I'm sure your husband would not approve of me.
My husband adores me and would not question anyone I invited to stay.
Perhaps he can find a suitably handsome French aristocrat for you. They are much more fun than the English in many ways, even if they have ridiculously strict social etiquette.
She paused, thinking, then added,
But I still think Giles Waverley would be a good match for you. He's a rather flimsy lad and needs a sensible girl like you to keep him on the straight and narrow.
You really think I should go to see him?
I really do. Or better yet, I'll invite him and his father over for tea. You can join us.
You really are a fairy godmother, I said. She gave me a sweet smile. The moment I saw you sitting in the gardens, I knew we should be great friends. That's how it is with me. I see a person, and either I adore them instantly or take a dislike to them. I started to stand up. I should go back to the hotel in case they want to question me some more. Do you think I should tell someone the truth immediately?
I'd wait and see which way the wind blows, she said. They haven't actually proven that a mushroom killed the Count, have they?
Not yet.
Well, there you are, then. It seems to me that nobody is asking the right question.
And that is? She gave me a knowing look.
Who might have wanted to kill the Count?
I believe the police are looking into that aspect, I said. The inspector from London surmised that someone from the Count's state in Germany might have gained employment at the hotel for that very reason.
Well, there you are, then, Lady Mary said. They'll find someone else with a motive, and you'll be in the clear.
I do hope so, I said.
So run along now. I have to finish dressing for a luncheon appointment in Cannes, she said. But I'll send word as to when the Waverleys might be coming to tea.
I can't thank you enough, I said.
Nonsense. You did me a good turn the other night, and I'm repaying the debt. And we women have to stick together, especially when dealing with thick-headed and narrow-minded men.
She gave me a little hug, then rang the bell for the maid to escort me to the door. I walked back in a daze, hardly daring to feel more hopeful. Was it possible that I could marry Giles? And the other question, did I want to marry Giles?
Of course I did. He was a sweet boy, gentle, amusing, and he was a viscount who would inherit an earldom someday. I'd be set up for life, safe, secure. Isn't that what every woman wants?
Chapter 32. As I walked through the gardens, I found my thoughts had turned to the interesting question that Lady Mary had raised. The Count had been the intended victim, not the Queen. If I could find out who wanted him dead, I'd be able to prove my innocence without having to reveal my name. I supposed it was possible, as had been suggested, that a person from the Count's home state had come here with the intention of killing him. In that case, I could understand shooting him. That is the usual anarchist's method, isn't it? But putting a poisonous mushroom in a pie in the hopes that the Count would choose the right slice, that was downright stupid. Anyway, the policeman from London would already be checking into that, as he probably would into my own background. I paused, shivering even though the sun was warm on my shoulders. I had to think and get to work quickly before a reply could be received from Yorkshire stating that Helen Barton was dead. Very well. Who wanted the Count removed? Princess Sophie was the obvious suspect. She had made it very clear that she did not want to marry him. But a princess could hardly have tampered with the food, certainly not put a poisonous mushroom into my pie. And she had never come into the kitchen. I thought about the attempted assassination of the Queen. Were the two in any way linked? It seemed unlikely, except that they happened so close together and the gun was found in the bushes at the palace. So the shooter had been nearby at some point. Why hide the gun here? Why not take it with him and throw it into the ocean? Then I remembered the other strange happening. A woman's voice screaming that something had been taken from her. I had assumed that it was the Queen's daughter, Princess Helena, the one who took drugs, and that someone had removed or hidden the drugs she depended upon. But what could that have to do with the Count's death? Was it possible that the thing the princess was searching for was her revolver? Might she fear that someone had taken it to try to kill her mother?
and that she might now be implicated. I knew that she felt her mother disapproved of her habit and was trying to break her of it, but might she be unstable enough to have tried to kill her mother, taken a potshot at her when there was chaos and darkness and a swirling crowd? It seemed unlikely, and she had certainly also never been anywhere near the kitchen. But what if the Count had not been the intended victim? I remembered other conversations I had overheard, those gentlemen discussing how to remove the despised Munshi. It had been suggested that Dr. Reed might be able to poison him. The doctor had laughed it off, but he was the only one who came into the kitchen. Had he somehow tainted food designed for the Indian? He knew we made vegetable dishes that would be acceptable to the Indian's religion, spicy dishes not meant for the royal family. What if one of those had been poisoned? The greedy Count couldn't resist helping himself to anything that took his fancy. For the first time, this seemed like a viable line of reasoning. Except there was another one. Ronnie Barton had tried to bribe me into tampering with the Queen's food on behalf of the Prince of Wales. I didn't think for a moment that the Prince would actively work to bring about his mother's demise, but Ronnie Barton had few scruples. I could quite see him sprinkling some poisonous substance into a dish designed for Her Majesty and not having too much of a conscience if the dish accidentally poisoned someone else first. The only thing against that argument was that, to my knowledge, Ronnie Barton had not come into the kitchen at any time, certainly not recently. The problem was that these two suppositions actually put me in more danger, not less. If Dr. Reed had tried to poison the Munshi, he certainly wasn't going to confess to it and would have every reason to make me seem to be the guilty one. Servants were always expendable. He could not risk his plot and his fellow conspirators being revealed. The fact that one of them was Lord Salisbury would bring down the government. Perhaps Dr. Reed and I could have a small private conversation in which I told him what I had overheard and that I didn't want my background checked into. We would agree to call the whole matter an unfortunate accident and let it drop. We would buy each other's silence. I shifted uneasily as a strong wind suddenly sprang up, sending blossoms flying. I had been raised to do the right thing. The use of a false name still hung heavy on my conscience, but this thought was one giant step beyond. It was hiding a crime. I didn't think I'd go to hell for using someone else's name. God would surely understand my desperation at that moment, but deliberately looking the other way when someone had been killed, I could never stomach that, however advantageous it would be for me. I broke off my reverie as I heard footsteps coming towards me. I was in no mood for conversation and looked around to see if I could make another escape into the shrubbery, but I was in a part of the grounds that was all open lawns. The footsteps were moving fast towards me. Princess Sophie came into view, walking at a great clip. She was dressed all in black, with a black lace veil draped over her head, which made her fair hair and complexion look almost ghost-like. Her face showed great distress. She was looking down and hadn't seen me. I stepped off the path and she was about to pass when she became aware of my presence. She looked up and gasped. "I'm sorry if I startled you, Your Highness," I said, even though I had done nothing except move out of her way. "You!" She almost spat out the word. "You're the one, aren't you? The one who poisoned my betrothed." "If the mushroom was indeed poisonous, I am afraid I was the one who baked the pie, Your Highness. But it has not yet been ascertained whether that was what killed the Count." "What else could it be?" she demanded, glaring at me. "Of course it was a mushroom, and they are saying you were stupid enough to buy food from a stall in the market, from a common street vendor." "I am really sorry," I said. "I bought food from a man who was presented to me as a reputable vendor by the hotel chef, who buys all his own mushrooms from that stall. I am no expert on mushrooms. There are varieties here I have never seen before. I trusted his judgment. I have told Her Majesty's secretary that I want this stall owner prosecuted and driven out of business," she said. "He should never be allowed to make this terrible mistake again. And this chef, who is he? He must also suffer for his mistake." "Highness, I can see that you are upset," I said. "I can quite understand. You've had a terrible shock, in fact, two shocks in such a short time. To see your betrothed shot and then to learn he has died is more than any woman should bear.
I did not add that this was not the sentiment she had presented to me the last time we met. But women are strange creatures, aren't we? We only realize what we treasure when it is taken from us.
At least I was fortunate not to witness the shooting, she said. I did not attend the procession. I had a headache that day, and I thought the noise of the bands and the crowd would be too much for me, so I stayed behind.
Probably very wise. It was noisy, and the crowd was rambunctious. But it was interesting for someone who has never witnessed such a show before.
We have Fasching, carnival in Germany, she said, and many parades. For me it was not worth sitting on a hard bench without even a cushion,
right where one can be ogled and pressed upon by the common people.
Then she seemed to realize she was talking to a common person.
I must return to the other ladies. I will be missed. We are supposed to be sitting in silence in mourning, but it was too sad and depressing to be in there, so I escaped for a few moments.
I'm sure nobody begrudged you some fresh air, I said.
It is not fitting to be seen out in public, she said. We must bear our grief and suffering locked away from the world.
Before she could leave, I reached out to her.
Your Highness, in your grief, I beg of you not to seek vengeance against the storekeeper or the chef.
But they must pay for their deeds, as must you, she said. I shall ask my cousin to have you dismissed. It is not right that you ever cook for my family again.
I'm sure the French police will be checking into the storekeeper and where he harvests mushrooms, I said. But as to the chef and myself, we had no way of knowing that one of the mushrooms was of a poisonous variety. It was an honest mistake.
Nevertheless, she said, glaring at me.
Have you never made a mistake in your life? I asked softly.
And were you punished unjustly for it?
No, she said defiantly. Never.
She was looking past me, and suddenly I saw her expression change. I saw hesitancy in her face and a look of fear in her eyes. Then she turned back to face me.
I must go. I am sorry that you must suffer for this mistake. But someone must pay.
She turned away and broke into a run across the lawn. I watched her cross the forecourt and disappear into the Queen's private entrance to the hotel. I thought about that sudden change of expression on her face, sudden realization and fear. Had she remembered a time when she had made a mistake, or had she seen someone in the garden who had alarmed her? She had, after all, been staring past me. I turned to look in that direction, but it was nothing but an open stretch of lawn, ringed by bushes, and there was nobody in sight. I couldn't think why anyone might be following her or have alarmed her, but just in case, I headed across the lawn to those bushes and peered around them. Nobody. The grounds were deserted except for myself. The bushes were just coming out into bloom, pretty open flowers.